Hello, how are you? Welcome to episode 6 of Flourish Together's Supporting Women in Social Enterprise podcast. I'm Nicola Talkington and one of the co-founders of Flourish Together. We're an organisation that helps women changemakers like you to flourish. In this episode, we're talking funding and in particular, different ways that you can generate an income for your venture beyond simply applying for grants. These are great for piloting a new idea, for research and development work, or for capital equipment where you can get them, but for longer term sustainability, developing a broader and more secure route to income is key. So coming up in this episode, you'll get the lowdown from one of our recent panel discussions, where you'll hear from a diverse bunch of awesome social enterprises, all led by women, and their different approaches to generating an income. They include Hearts Domestic Violence Prevention, Ready Lane Market Garden, Your Earth Clinic, and Soha Barbecue. You'll also hear from some of our Changemaker community about how they go about fundraising. But first, producer Vic joins me to talk about income generation cocktails.
Thanks, Nicola. So I really wanted to talk to you about income generation, and I know it's a massive subject, but I thought, let's narrow it down to what this podcast is all about, and that's all about diversifying our income. Now, what do we mean when we talk about diversifying income?
Often, social enterprises or the charity sector, the word income, the word profit, the ideas of making money, to some people can seem a bit alien, either because it's, you know, there's a social cause that's overriding what they're doing, why they get out of bed in the morning, or sometimes people are just a bit shy or a bit backwards about coming forwards when it comes to charging for what they do, even trying to put a price tag on something. So the idea of making income out of what they're doing, certainly in the early years, or if they're shy about sales, it'll be an alien concept. When we talk about diversifying income or even creating income, it's multiple sources is the way I would talk about it. So often when I run a workshop about this, there's five different ways that we talk about income. One is from the point of view of trading. So there's trading income that people can do. They might be selling products or services. So Belu Water, for example, is selling bottles of water to the public, to restaurants, through retail shops. You know, the Houses of Parliament or wherever else are buying it in bulk. People are selling something physical. They might be selling a service. So at Flourish, we're selling consultancy services and we're, you know, selling people our time by the day, by the hour, by the programme. There's also commissioning. So commissioning is where it's almost like a wholesale version of selling. So rather than selling direct to the public or to certain businesses, you're selling to someone who's buying in bulk almost. So commissioners are people who've got a budget to buy things and you're going to be helping them do their job better, you know, whether they're a health commissioner, a local authority commissioner, a voluntary community sector commissioner. I mean, we commission work, we're commissioning you to do these podcasts. So commissioning is almost like working to somebody else's brief. You're not just selling to the public or selling what you like. You're perhaps packaging that up in a certain way or designing it in a certain way, putting it across in a certain way to meet a particular demand. Then what you've got is funding and fundraising, and the two things are different. Funding, grants, things that you would fill in an application form for, something where you've got eligibility criteria, you've got to tick somebody's boxes and dance to somebody's tune for them to say, yes, we'll fund you, you can have this grant, you can have this investment, and we'll back you. Fundraising is different in that it's a bit more free, less strings attached, and there are various ways of fundraising that people might know, things like a raffle or crowdfunding, or there might be, you know, a friends of group that does fundraising on your behalf. So usually the difference between funding and fundraising is the grants where you fill in a form, there's a deadline, there's criteria. Fundraising is where you go out and you rustle and hustle and see how you can get people to back what you're doing. That can also be through events. So for example, we've got these Flourish Soup events that we're running, and that's a fundraising thing where people are buying a ticket. It's like we're trading because it's you know, it's a donation for a ticket, and then they'll come along to an event. We've raised some cash and we can then choose what we do with that money. We've not been bound by what a funder tells us. So those are, in my mind, different ways of diversifying income. The final bit within that is social investment, which people tend to look at when they're perhaps a bit further down the line or they're a bit of a larger organisation, they've got a track record. And social investment either looks like loans or it looks like equity investment, usually. Sometimes people tack grants within the social enterprise bucket, but I see them as a separate thing. So ultimately, there's trading, there's commissioning, there's funding and fundraising and social investment. And I always talk to people about their cocktail and what are they doing in each of those areas to bring in cash and resources. That's how I talk about it.
Tell me more. A little bit more about this cocktail. So I love a cocktail.
Yes. And every cocktail is different and every business is different, aren't they? So there's no right or wrong way to go about this. The wrong way is putting all your eggs in one basket. The right way is trying to get some level of balance or a multi-pronged attack in terms of bringing in resources, be they thinking about what you can trade to the public and to other different audiences, thinking about who might commission your work either on a small scale through just budget holders that want to commission you to do something, or looking at procurement on a larger scale and thinking about how are the services and activities that you're doing meeting some commissioners' targeted strategic outcomes where you will pitch for work through commissioning and procurement processes, which are a bit more complicated but far less complicated than people think. And then it's certainly in terms of a cocktail, it's about getting a balanced approach, thinking about not putting all your eggs in one basket and making sure that you're thinking outside the box, really. There's always other ways to make money, you know, whether it's money or whether it's resources as well. And that's something I've perhaps not mentioned when we were looking about diversifying income, is income isn't always cash. You know, there's a big part of the social enterprise and charity and voluntary community sector where their income is in kind stuff, it's in kind time, it's favours, it's being able to use someone's office or stuff for free. It might be having somebody who will do something for you in return. You know, there might be bartering and trade-offs, there might be some sponsorship or some CSR relationship where getting something in kind. People often underestimate the value of their in-kind support or what they could be getting through in-kind support that they're maybe either currently paying for or is holding them back because they're not accessing or they're not asking. Speakers, trainers, certain people that we work with, it's a loss leader for them sometimes to come and deliver a training session or to be involved in something we do. So they'll give us their time in kind.
There's an element of mapping all this out, isn't there? Just having a good old brainstorm. What you're basically saying is don't go for a boring vodka and coke approach. Go no. for like a go Long Island iced tea or a Sex on the Beach.
Well, I was going to say my favourite's a porn star martini. I've got to say I've got a penchant for passion fruit. Yeah, it mix it up for sure. And ask your peers and your colleagues. You know, it's a big part of what we do at Flourish is creating events offline and now online to be able to help people see what other people are doing. You know, working in isolation or keeping your nose to the grind all the time, you can forget, you know, what some of the other opportunities are. And actually, sometimes you forget the quality of what you're doing and how you could be selling it to other audiences. Often people can't see beyond grant funding, you know, and they're looking at, oh, we've got to apply for this grant, or we've got to be doing that. And they've got 5-10 years experience of delivering amazing services, building people's skills and knowledge and confidence. And so if sometimes people just take a step back and they look, what are the products and services that are actually being delivered through my organisation? And think, who wants this stuff? Yes, my immediate community, the beneficiaries that we're working with want this stuff, but who else might want this stuff? Could the education sector want this? Could the health sector want this? Are there private businesses, people in the retail industry? And sometimes by having just a broader think about who your customers are, not just the beneficiaries, not just the people that you're supporting on the ground, but who's paying for it. You think a bigger picture on who's paying for this. Is it a grant funder? Is it a person off the street? Is it another voluntary and community sector agency that needs what you're doing and they haven't got time to build their own capacity so they could buy you in? Is it wider public sector or private sector professionals who you can develop relationships with to then be bought in to deliver stuff? So time is a barrier. I understand that. But the dividends pay off because you can't get, you know, what I always say, you can't get repeat business from a grant. You can't get, you know, there are some grants that might fund you for a year, for 3 years. You might be able to go back, but grant funding isn't sustainable. We do know that. Grant funding really should be used for research and development work, piloting things, for getting new things off the ground, or for working with vulnerable or disadvantaged people where there's grants and subsidies on purpose to help you engage with people. More and more funders are looking for how you're going to be sustainable in the long term beyond the grant that somebody might offer you. And they might need some support to do this, you know, if it's not there, you know, if they can't just sit and throw ideas down quite so easily, or they, you know, they need someone to prod and poke them to help that to happen. Coming to a Flourish session, getting in touch with some of our mentors, or, you know, accessing other support that's out there can help them think through what might enterprise options look like for them. Often it can start with a bit of a skills audit, having a think about, you know, what are our skills and expertise? What skills and knowledge have we got in this team, or have I got in myself? And who might need those skills? One way to start is you can be looking at what your competitors are doing. What are similar services like? How are they sustaining themselves over and above grants? Who's buying from them in ways that perhaps we haven't started to think about yet?
And I imagine that you guys are on the end of a phone or a Zoom call away from helping people to generate these ideas for alternative funding streams.
If people are wanting support right now, the best way is to link with our peer learning events. We run monthly events, and we've also started to run these virtual soup events, which is like a fundraising event that can also create cash to invest in people. Those are our most accessible way of getting it just in time support. We're not a core funded organization, so we have to support people through our peer learning activities, but there's also our Time to Grow and Resilient Leaders programs that people can link to as well, which are offering more intensive support.
Fantastic. And you can find out all about those events, what you've got coming up on your Twitter, which is at FlourishCSC, and then also the website flourishtogether.org.uk. We are recording this in lockdown, so
we are.
Interesting about, you just finished there on grant funding. Now, I've just mentioned we are in lockdown, so you will be listening to this most probably still in lockdown yourselves. Why now do you think is important for social enterprises and not-for-profits to start thinking about diversifying their income?
The landscape's completely shifted. Everything's changed. Everything is in a state of flux. And so there's a few reasons for having a rethink around all of this. So if we think about grants right now, and this may come to change, but a lot of the funding agencies have either stopped, paused, or are reframing what they're going to invest their money in. And if what you're doing isn't a neat fit for a solution for the coronavirus, certainly the lottery and certain other funders, which are often sources of grants for many of this sector, to either trial something new, like I say, develop something or look for a three-year growth strategy that you know they pump prime. Some of the grants that are out there are going to change significantly and may or may not be as accessible, may certainly going to be a huge amount of competition for, and may force you to rightly or wrongly adapt what you're doing. Just being aware of that and having a think about, are you a key solution to what's going on around us right now? And if not, having a good look at those funders who have not reframed and reshaped their grants packages quite the same is going to be important. Over and above grants, which is, you know, the whole sort of premise of diversifying that cocktail, if our grants are shrinking, which they have been doing for some time, if they've now been reframed, thinking of other routes to income is paramount. Mm. And developing services, adapting services, looking at how things can be done remotely and online. And that actually opens up a whole new audiences for people, certainly from the point of view of Flourish. People have been asking us for years to get online, and now we've been forced to do it. So during this pandemic and beyond, now we're developing the skills and the ways of working to reach out online in a much more effective way. You know, some of the social enterprises, businesses, community organisations that are out there are in a similar boat, and it's looking at what those new opportunities are digitally, in terms of new audiences, in terms of a lot of people who've been sadly either made redundant or furloughed. There's a lot of talent and a lot of people out there right now who are looking for opportunities. We've been contacted by, you know, three people already saying, can we come and volunteer for you? And our ultimate goal is about increasing people's economic independence. And I think that's what underpins all of this. When you say why now, it's about increasing the economic independence of communities so that they've got the autonomy and the independence to get on with that social change they're trying to make. Unless you've got a cocktail of some sort, whether it's a vodka and coke, porn star martini or anything in between, you're going to limit what you can do, and you're going to be having to dance to somebody else's tune.
Nicola, you must know some amazing organisations that are doing this whole diversifying income thing really well. Tell me about some of those.
They might not see it themselves, you know, they're a modest bunch, but certainly in the last few weeks alone, a lot of the people in our network are highly creative, innovative, respond to a crisis well. You know, that's what they set up their social businesses for. Granted, we're in a microcosm and under a real lens of what's going on around us, but some of the businesses that I've seen that are stepping up are the Old Abbey Tap House, which is a kind of steam hub, community pub in Manchester. It's a pub, it's a retail business, it's leisure and tourism and hospitality. The doors are shut, so they've had to think really quickly about how they can adapt their model, and they've gone down two routes, well, three routes. They've upped the delivery services for food that they were offering through things like Uber Eats and other ways to get takeout and food to the general public. They're based on the edge of Hume, and there's a huge deprived community around there, lots of sort of housing associations, high-rise flats and all sorts. And so they're designing these one-pot meals in partnership with a handful of other organisations to get Meals on Wheels services out to people, vulnerable people. And they've set up a community radio station to help keep contact with their community, and they were already in the process of developing consultancy services to support other pub is the hub type venues. Likewise, you've got Open Kitchen Manchester. We've supported them there through our mentorathon years ago by always buying their food in. But to see them on the ITV news the other week telling us how they've been taking this order, you know, they've just managed to save, you know, because a big part of what they do is to save food from going to landfill, and they've saved over a million meals that were sitting in freezers in planes and airports, so that those meals can now be distributed to people who are in need, you know, dire need at the moment. And they've really ramped up their services up with strategic links and strategic partnerships that they've got with the councils and housing associations and others. Ready Lane is another good example. They're it's a market garden.
Oh, we're going to hear from Ready Lane in this.
How are you?
In this podcast episode.
Oh, fantastic. The pressure's on for her, don't get me wrong. I mean, gosh, she'll be exhausted. So adapting her model to be doing more deliveries, more veg boxes, and ultimately in the end, she's going to need additional people to help her, and that will create opportunities for volunteers and others. And a lady called Kat Lecoq, who's on one of our previous podcasts about communicating impact. I mean, a lot of what she does is sort of freelance support and consultancy, coaching. Some of her clients and some of her things have just disappeared overnight, and rather than sort of rest on her laurels, she's pulled together and motivated over 20 practitioners, you know, helping other people to not lose sight that, you know, now is still a good time to be selling, and especially moving people online. So you can go to Share Impact, and there's a free virtual summit happening where there's like 20 mini videos to look at, and ultimately that's a lost leader for those people who've put those videos together. But packaged as a whole, it's a great resource for people right now to get some good personal and professional development, but learn about who else is out there. So there's lots of really interesting creative things going on.
We'll put a link to all those organisations we've mentioned in the show notes. This is all brilliant information, Nicola. We do so well on this podcast. Well done. It's so helpful. So if our listener is inspired by your great words of wisdom today, where can they go? Is there any route to any further information out there about all this?
So yeah, when we run our kind of income generation strategy sessions, we do spend a lot of time looking at, you know, where, how you consider routes to finance and support. And right now there's a lot of information flying around on all of these sorts of things. What I would say is look broad. So I would always tell people to look at what's happening locally. So at their CVSs, their councils for voluntary services, their enterprise and business support, like the Growth Hub and things like that. Look at what's happening in other sort of local community networks and what the, you know, their local authorities are doing, what's being said. So then you've got the options of looking regional. So that's things like the Key Fund, got GMCBO, works on a sort of Greater Manchester level, the School for Social Entrepreneurs, and other forms of regional support that exist beyond, you know, what's on your doorstep. You've then got national, and there's a raft of national agencies out there. Certainly having a look at Social Enterprise UK's website on what support they've got available at the moment, and giving people very clear guidance and information around what to do currently if you're trying to run as a social enterprise. You've either starting up, maybe you've been running 3 to 5 years, maybe you've been running, you know, 10 to 20 years. Depending on who you are, how you're running, how you operate, there's a slightly different way of accessing support in the current climate. So I'd check their website for that. You've got organisations like Big Society Capital and Social Investment Business, and some of the larger charities that are like the Lottery, the Arts Council, Esme Fairbairn, Power to Change. I mean, there's heaps of national agencies, Paul Hamlin. Depending on what you do, your local CVS, for example, or online portals like Funding Central, which is a free to small charities and social enterprises to do funding searches, is a really good way to get started. Something people forget is that there are also lots of forms of support by sector. So whether you're working in health, education, youth, environment, the arts, creative, digital and tech, for example, there's support agencies, there's networks, there's funds and investment under all of those. So not just seeing yourself as a community project or an organisation in the voluntary sector or a social enterprise per se means that you've got access to a wider pool of support out there.
Oh, so lots of things to research, lots of things to think about. Thank you so much, Nicola, and a fountain of useful, inspiring knowledge as always. Thank you.
Thanks, Vic. She'll be back later on in the episode when she speaks to some of our Changemaker community about how they go about diversifying their income streams. Now, to put some of that theory I spoke about before into action. I'm so excited to share this brilliant panel discussion with you. It was recorded live at a recent Flourish event backed by the People's Powerhouse, and our panellists share with you the ways that they've generated an income for their organisation.
Got five amazing change makers who have lived and breathed their venture for some time now. And I guess what we're trying to unpick in the next sort of 15 minutes or so is around how do you turn that passion to profit? You know, how do you sustain this stuff without relying too much on the grants and things like that? How do you mix up your funding cocktail? We've got five women here who have got lived experience of this. Hopefully some of their insights and their journey will inspire you or give you some tips for the future. I'm just going to crack on and basically get Meech to talk a little bit about themselves, who they are, what they're doing, what their mission is, and how long they've been doing it for. Yvonne, can we start with you?
Do you mind me stand up?
Stand up, please, yeah.
My name is Yvonne. I'm a founder of Sour Barbecue. Before being a founder of Sour Barbecue, I've been chairing Dynamic Support, which is a charity. We're based here in Manchester, and we promote health and well-being for women and girls. Since 2012, Dynamic Support has been running up and down because of lack of funding. And we said, we have skills in catering, but who to speak to? Then we approached Flourish in 2016, 17, something like that. I've told them that I have this passion of cooking. And I want to bring not only cooking wide, but I want to focus especially on barbecue. Because I noticed that here in Europe and in England, most in Manchester with the weather, people tend to eat barbecue only on summer. So I want to make it regularly present in the dishes. So they liked my idea, and I was fortunate enough to have £300, which has allowed me to cook some samples and attending some event, like weddings, with my samples of barbecue, which they liked. And then I approached BME Network. I've told them about this idea that they liked, and European, Western people liked it as well, but how can I make it big? BME gave me some advices, which has helped me to get in touch with GMCVO. My business plan was, honestly, bad. Anyway, I've tried my best. Luckily, they are good people. They never rejected anyone. I was showing them that I want this stuff. They told me, okay, go back and make it good again. But I did my best. I did my business plan is good. How can you tell me to go and do it good? Anyway, 3 weeks later, they wrote to me. They said, okay, we like your idea. Okay, we will connect you with Rich Fund. With Rich, you will be able to fund, to choose any consultant who will help you to be business ready. Oh, I said, okay, that sounds good. Since 3 years ago now, I've been with my consultant who has helped to rewrite again my business plan and resubmit it. So the panel at GMCVO agreed, accepted, and they allowed us to have £30,000 to buy a mobile catering van to go everywhere where we want to satisfy our community. So I want to say this, that from £300 from Flourish, I was able to do what we are doing today. We go everywhere with our mobile van. We drive. It's not men. We don't want men to drive our van. but when we are breakdown, we call men to come in. So they are very useful for us. We never made any profit, but what we tried to do, it was to break even. So to allow us at least to do not miss any month without paying our investor. At the start, I was stressful, but no, I became more confident. So we have also students from Manchester University who came 2 months now, isn't it? They are with us every 2 weeks, coming to our kitchen, learning, and they are running a consultancy project for them. They are doing well, and with Sawa, they want to make Sawa more professional. So soon we will have a new website only for Sawa, made by them. Thank you very much for joining.
Just a couple of points to pick up there, Ivan. Thank you so much. So GMCVO, for those who don't know, it's Greater Manchester Council for Voluntary Organisations. It's an organisation that connects you into support, and they do have a social investment fund called REACH. When you walked into that room a few years ago, and to see where you are now, it's just amazing. And that's not just because of the support you got from others, it's because you came in with that passion and that heart, and can't help but want to support you in your endeavours. And the food is absolutely bloody delicious. It's absolutely gorgeous. If there's ever an event on and I see your catering at it, I go, even though I'm not interested in the event, I'm just like, I'm all over that buffet. I'm like, I want that food. It's delicious. And I think that's key. The product that you make is quality. It's made from the heart. It's beautiful. And it tells a story around your heritage and the other people that you work with as well. It's got a very important cultural message as well. So thank you, Yvonne.
I don't really know how to follow that. I'm Kelly, and we run Heart Domestic Violence Prevention in Stockport. And we run domestic violence prevention programs for young men and women in high school. We started in November 2016. It's been hard, challenging, but also really rewarding. And we're now at the stage 2 months ago where we've just been able to leave our jobs and we're in high school full time now. So I would say don't give up.
That's great news.
Hi everyone, I'm Rachel and I'm the co-founder with my sister Laura over there. So we're the co-founder of a luxury ethical women's wear brand called Coretto, so we're based here in Manchester. So I had the idea when I was 14, so 10 years ago now. So it's a dress that has a zip around the waist, so it's a top and a skirt, so you can mix and match them and have a different size top to bottom or the same size throughout. So I guess my mission is that I really want to like champion diversity in the fashion industry, because I feel like so many times you go into a changing room and you feel like, oh, clothes don't fit me, and you think like, oh, I wish I was taller, I wish I was this, but I wanted to create a dress that changed to fit the person and really push that. And I guess in terms of like the social mission, like it's ethical recycled fabric made in Manchester. And then we also love doing charity partnerships, like we've done Smart Works, like Prince's Trust.
Brilliant, thank you, Laura. Natasha.
Hi everyone, I'm Natasha Nan Bujihawan and I'm the co-founder of Earth Clinic. Earth Clinic is a holistic clinic based in Old Trafford and we serve our community, but our community is also very global. We also work with people in every corner of the globe. So we provide integrated holistic health and well-being services and education to people to support our community to overcome chronic health conditions, psychological imbalances, and heal and evolve and really in doing that help to raise consciousness and really support the collective as a whole. So yeah, we started off 12 years ago starting a social enterprise called Union Street Media Arts. We made all of our mistakes doing that. And coming into Earth Clinic, we were at a place where we were really able to really take our passion and create our life and work together.
I'm Lindsay. I'm the founder of Ready Lane Market Garden. We're a small scale, organically certified vegetable farm in Cheshire. We grow our own veg, which we sell. We do Altrincham and Levenshulme Market, and we do a veg book scheme. Mainly what we do is trade, but this year we got our first grant to run community volunteer sessions.
And I've been on Lindsay's market gardening course, oh, and yeah, it's very good. I didn't realise how hard farming was. I was exhausted by the end of it. I don't know how you do it. It's back-breaking work, but it was really good fun. Obviously, these things didn't just happen overnight. There was a process that you had to go through to get to where you are now. How do you start up? Because I know that a lot of women, when they think about setting something up, they feel that they have to stop something there and start something there, when very often there may be a bit of a juggle. Because, I mean, you just talked then, Kelly, about you've just given up your career.
So I've been working in frontline domestic abuse whilst working part-time in school doing the prevention stuff.
Yeah.
So I've been juggling them two things. And then my husband, Jake, he's been working full-time, funding it, so that's how we started off. But now we teach boys as well. He's been able to leave his job and he teaches, but we teach the boys and the girls together now. Yeah. So it's like modelling that kind of healthy relationship.
So, I mean, you just talked then, Kelly, about you've just given up your career. Working, but then also doing it as a kind of side hustle.
Yeah.
That's what it's felt like. And there's so many times I felt like giving up. I think I had to keep remembering the women I was working with on the front line and why I was trying to do the preventative work and remembering why I started.
What gave you the confidence to say, right, I'm going to hand in my resignation and this is us, we're going to...
It was when we got commissioned by Stockport Council to do a train the trainer programme. Jake had to write a business plan, deliver a presentation to Stockport Council, and we won that, and that was £16,500, and that gave us the money to be able to leave our full-time jobs because we've been saving up other money as well.
Right, and your funding mix now, kind of where you're at?
Yeah, the school's like match fund, so we put loads of funding applications in. At the moment we're funded by the Co-op, Stockport Local Fund, Stockport Council, I'm trying to think what else I've written down. Oh, and we've just done a partnership with Guinness and Ecclesy Housing as well. So, and that just came from my LinkedIn page. Someone from Equity contacted me on LinkedIn, so that was really nice. But we had to go through like a series of meetings before we commissioned anything. And now we're in a Prue in Brinnington, which has been amazing.
Congratulations. Anybody else want to share their kind of start? What was the day where they thought, right, I can do this, I'm going to...
When I approach you, you like when you like my idea, that gave me a lot of confidence and courage that, oh yes, with that money, I can cook and start contacting wedding organizer in Africa, Africa community, which when they liked it, I said, okay, I can do this then. Till now, I've not been paid. I'm still doing this, because I like it and I know where I will be maybe in 2 or 3 years' time. So I don't think about having some payment now, some wages now. It's true, yes. My husband always sometimes, you don't bring anything here, yeah. So we shout, so what? I kept telling him, be patient, it's coming. So he said, when? But it's coming. It's not easy, honestly, it's not easy. When you know where you will be in 1 year or 2 years, it drives you. I will never give up anyway. I know where I'm going.
So. Yeah, okay, so that validation of people who like your idea, that was the impetus to take it further. Yeah. That's great.
Yeah, I think mine's very similar to Kelly. So like when I had the idea, I was at school and then I went on to university. And then when I was trying to develop the idea, I was at uni. And then I went into a job and I'm still working full time as well. So I think it's very much that juggle because I've never known not juggling, if that makes sense. So I think like when I actually do take the leap, feel like it's going to be a bit of a weird
adjustment. I have kind the worst panic attack.
Yeah, yeah. I feel that's the thing, because I've always had that safety blanket, if that makes sense. So I am looking forward to doing that, but I think
it's worth it then.
Definitely. But do you think, like you said, it's like the people around you, because I feel like sometimes when you feel a bit like, oh, like there's a lot of stuff going on, but you know that so many people believe in your idea, and that's what definitely like keeps you going. I think that's really been the key motivator. Yeah.
I think getting a business mentor through Flourish, that really, really helped us as well. So we're really grateful for that.
Yeah, because sometimes it's not just the money, is it? It's the actual support and the belief and the validation that what you're doing is the right thing to do. And hopefully we can bring women together to do that. And I think that's what Flourish is very good at.
I think there's something I was going to add. I know I have a habit of jumping in, but, you know, talking about money there. For anyone who thinks, oh, you know, how is this working? How can we do this? Jo and I have both ran our own freelance businesses for the last, 4 years. Jo's much longer, about six,
eight,
seven, eight.
8 years, yeah.
You know, we've been successful in running freelance businesses, which is no mean feat. And when I say successfully, you know, profit making. And Flourish has made a profit year on year. So, you know, it's possible, and we'll happily share how we do that. So you start small and you...
Yeah. I had the same as you, Yvonne, though. My partner say, is this paid work today? And I'm like, no.
And I'm the opposite, because I have no partner. So I can't not earn, and I can't wait for someone to pay. So that drives me.
Yeah, so how do you do your networking, and how do you get your business in?
A lot of connections that I've made have been nurtured really over a long time.
Yeah.
And I found that people come back into my life like 5, 6, 7, 8 years later and something happens. And so I think nurturing those and having that patience, nurturing those long-term relationships is really important.
Yeah,
I do a lot on social media just because of the nature of my business and looking to expand more globally. It makes sense for me to reach out also to more of a global market, and so I do invest quite a bit of time on that.
Yes.
And I'm able to follow those connections up and have Zoom calls with people and also serve those people in the end too. So that really, really works for me, both the local and the kind of international connections online.
For me, like, if I didn't know anyone who had run a business before, so I kind of like was like forced to go out networking, and I went to my first event and so just chatted to people and I was asking for like their feedback and advice. Even when I didn't have a dress yet, I feel like then people kind of like invest in you right at the start and they want to follow your journey. I feel like you kind of really want, like Flourish do, like really want to support you, and like, and then when you do have the product, you've already got that foundation there.
Yeah.
So I think like, yeah, get out as early as possible and never dismiss anyone at networking, because everybody wants to help us.
Outcomes was the most important thing for us. So we started in November 2016 and we wanted to make sure we were doing a good job, so we've just been gathering as many outcomes as we can.
And I think that's really important, and at Flourish, certainly we started off testing out ways of working, and then we went down the route of getting some funding in from Awards for All, which enabled us to invest in somebody to come in and help us measure our social impact. And that really now is our business case for people to invest in us, because we can say this is the difference this makes. You've just gone down that line, haven't you, Lindsay?
Yeah, we got our first Awards for All grant this year and did community volunteering sessions. And Nicola's just done as a little report audit after interviewing the volunteers. And they said some lovely stuff. It's great. I will have this report that I think just sounds like we can really do that, and that's definitely an income stream that I would pursue. Though still, as a farm, my interest and passion is actually just trade good product, sell it. Because if you want to change farming, you're not doing that only as a grant-funded volunteer sessions. That will always only be a percentage of what we can do.
Yeah, and that's true about the social impact bit around. It's not really about, well, it can work on a number of levels. So you've got a business case to potentially bring in more customers because you can evidence your impact. There's that whole validation to yourself going, oh, actually, you know what? The blood, sweat and tears was worth it. You know, people did value this, but also a check-in around what hasn't worked, what could potentially, you know, be tweaked around your service or product. And I think that's a really important thing, is to keep connected with those that you sell to. So in terms of your funding cocktail, so are you all trading? I mean, are you all selling something?
Yeah.
Yeah? Mm-hmm. Whether that's a service, which is in a training package into schools.
Training program.
And you're selling your product, which is the dress.
Yeah, the clothes.
You're selling your food, delicious food. And you're selling
services.
And you're selling your product. We've got a really good mix there. So I think some people think, when they think about trading, they think about a product, you know, and volumes of products. But actually, it's services, it's your intellectual property. Particularly if you've got lived experience of an issue, you're perfectly placed to deal with that and challenge the system on it. And I think that's undervalued sometimes, because you can change things more effectively than maybe someone that hasn't had that lived experience. So have you got any top tips then for going out on this wild journey of social entrepreneurship?
I was always asking people advices because I have that barrier of language and I was feeling low. Honestly, that was my weakness. I thought, I have the idea. I drive, I see restaurants. I say, but I can do this, even maybe better, because I know what I'm doing. But how can I put it in, you know, life? So I started asking people, and I remember when I met my role model. When I met that lady, she said, you know, don't feel low, because you are more than what you think that you are. So this is what always puts women behind, because they are scared of bringing their idea on the table. Kill that fear and go for your idea. Talk about your idea and you will meet good people around who will help you, which I did. So my top tip that I can advise you, never feel low. When you have your idea, bring it to life. Connect with people. You will find on your way many people. Those who will say, no, you can't do it because, you know, it's not your country here. But you don't know where you will be born. You don't know where you will die. As long as where your feet touch is your land, be humble. Even if you know more than the person who is training you or who is your mentor, accept critiques. Because from those critiques, that will bring you up.
That's brilliantly fun. Thank you.
The biggest thing I've had to learn is getting comfortable talking about money, because I was so uncomfortable with it because I started this from heart and soul and from lived experience. So I was so uncomfortable. I'd bat away questions about money. And I remember going on the Lloyd's TSB program and they were like, well, you can't actually get this out into the world and get to more young people if you're not being paid. And my husband was saying the same thing. So getting comfortable talking about money, but I'd also say, accept, be open to learning all of the time. And self-care is a big one, because you can feel quite stressed sometimes. So it's making sure, as well as going out there doing your thing, is making sure you're looking after yourself and doing things that you love for your soul, and just keeping yourself healthy and happy.
I see my top tip for funding is, I guess, because like it took quite a long time to develop the dress, and because I was working at, I stayed at home for university, so I used like a student loan to develop the dress. So I think because you do have like a bit of money, because you're almost working to fund your business, you sometimes like just invest, but you're not actually taking a step back to think like, am I being as efficient as possible? So I think another top tip would be, I'll probably preach into a private, like just make sure you kind of support other businesses. So I think when we felt like we moved forward, it's like when somebody's took a chance on us, or like no one else has said, oh, I want to get a dress, but then one person says, oh, I'd love a dress, and then other people get on board. So I think just remember like the power of you as a consumer, or even like a tweet can really like amplify the impact. So I think that would be my ask, like take a chance on people who don't normally get chances. So I think that would be
I've got three. My first one is self-care, absolutely at the top of my list, really important. My second one is, so many of us are, we're setting up campaigns or organisations where we're really doing work around important social issues, and a lot of us have so many more people to serve and a bigger workload. How do we do that when we're juggling so much? And so for me, we've got to really get smart about how we work and making sure that we're really, really clear on our vision and our values so that we can really use those to make decisions about where we put our time and where we put our energy, and think about the bigger picture and think about how all the different facets of our life actually work together, because it's not, we can't just see things in isolation. Everything works together. If we have a part-time job that enables us to grow an organization, that all does work together, you know, and it can be more effective when we look at everything as a whole. My other tip is that it's important for us to, if we want to grow and expand our businesses, to do the really challenging, difficult work to look at what are the key blocks and old energies that are really stopping us, you know, those core beliefs that we might have that are actually really hindering us from growing. That we have parts of us that on the surface are doing all this really amazing planning work and getting out there, but many of us, and I know I do, you know, have like deep down core beliefs of unworthiness and imposter syndrome and like, oh my gosh, and I found it really empowering to like look at those and bring those to the surface and clear those as much as possible, and that's given me the confidence and that's helped me to reduce my stress and really be able to channel my energy into my business where it needs to go, and really trust actually that it's going to develop in the way that it's going to develop. My last thing is I run Airbnb as a part-time thing. I love it because I'm really passionate about hosting people. And so find something that you're really passionate about doing that you can do as a part-time job or something on the side that actually earns you really good money. And when the rest of the time that you put into your business, make sure it's just that. Because if you're then still working 60 hours on top of doing a part-time job, you've actually got no room to expand. You won't be able to expand your business because there simply isn't any room. Great. So, yeah, those Thank are my you. Top tips.
Someone in our network, I can't remember who says it, but you can't drink, is it, you can't drink from an empty cup?
That's Camilla.
Yeah, Camilla. And it's working in an environment where we're giving so much and we're caring so much that actually, you know, it's very easy to deplete your own energy. And then how can you give on top of that? So, yeah, refill in order to give.
I'm going to do what Natasha did and do three. For me, like, I love farming. I love being a farmer, and it fills me up doing this. And I tried a lot of things before I decided that I wanted to be an organic farmer. I think get your head around the money, and now you have an accountant and QuickBooks, and it really helps me look at the pie charts and just get your head around that. And I think if you do like self-belief, imposter syndrome, I think what has helped me with those things was the Flourish Network. And I was in the room when me and Yvonne pitched at the same time. And I didn't feel like I could do what I've done in the last couple of years. But with support, with people that believe in you, you actually can do far more than you think. I look at what it says and I think, oh God, I did that. you know, and if you don't do it yourself, find people who will, you know.
Yeah. Brilliant. What a great way to end. I hope you found that interesting, and thank you so much for being so open and generous around your journey. Thank you so much.
How good was that? Lots and lots of different ideas for you to start thinking differently about how to fundraise and get more money into your organisation. Finally, in today's episode, we hear from more of our community of changemakers. This is our Flourish Talk section, and this month, of course, we're talking all about making money.
I'm Emma Lenihan, and I'm from Calm Connections.
What's your main income method?
Well, at the moment, our main income method is via funding. So we've been working really hard on sustainability plans. We have got the ability to charge families for our services, those who can afford it, but and we're just setting up a sponsorship programme as well.
So yeah. It's a mix of things, so grant funding, earned income and sponsorship.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
And did you make a conscious decision to diversify those funding streams?
Yes, I don't want to be just relying on one. I want to be here in 10 years. I would like Calm Connections to be a household name. I want there to be support there for families wherever it's needed. So I think like just concentrating on one income stream would have been quite limiting for us. So we're just going with the flow, really, and seeing what happens.
Where do you go for support when it comes to funding, income generation?
I have been so fortunate. Calm Connections is actually going to be used as a case study in Trafford Business Enterprise Programme because, like, so I accessed, like, a Women in Business course through Trafford 2 years ago, and they then set up, like, a funding programme. So we've had support, then been introduced to so many other different avenues. So we're working with the Growth Hub, got support from Unlimited. Yeah, loads, really. So yeah, so we've been really lucky. On our board now, we have somebody who is a bid writer as well. We've got lots of support.
Any advice for people who are maybe starting a social enterprise who are not sure about, they're thinking, oh, I can't get funding? Like,
it's a bit of a slog, so keep at it. It can be very disappointing when you get those rejections. I mean, we haven't been majorly successful with the funding, but we've been successful enough to run what we need to run. And I know that coming into our next year now, that's one of our aims to look at, in getting a bid writer in so that we are more successful. And just don't give up. Get those relationships going with as many people as you can. Get that support in place and, yeah, and don't give up.
My name's Saima. I'm a student studying naturopathic nutrition. So what I did over the summer was I set up Amazeballs, and Amazeballs are raw, vegan, healthy, homemade treats. Energy balls, they're made from, and the desserts, they're all made from whole foods like nuts and seeds and dates and essential oils. I'd like to get this out there properly, maybe eventually work towards having my own little, like a healthy deli cafe, yeah.
And how would you get funding for that? Have you thought about where to go for support?
That's why I'm here, to make connections and network and find out more about funding.
Where do you go for help now? Do you think it's difficult to find out where to get funding for things?
I don't think it's difficult. I think it's about that concept of who you know, and if you know, you connecting with the right people. And I think if you connect with the right people who can help you and support you with getting the funding, then I think the funding's there, it's available, isn't it?
And my name's Laura Beattie, and alongside my sister Rachel, we run the luxury ethical women's wear brand Caro, based in Manchester. So our main income source at the moment has been the Kickstarter that we recently did. And we have been working, Rachel works full time still, and I worked as a tutor for an educational charity. So that was our main income. And at the moment, it has been the bespoke pieces that we have been doing. That has been our main generator of the income, and that's keeping us there. We've not had any grants or anything like that. It has been like the Kickstarter and just through our own savings and income.
Was that a conscious decision not to apply for any grants or anything like that?
Not to apply for grants. I think for fashion there isn't that many that we've been able to source or anything. So I think that's been quite a challenge in a way, because, and especially with product base, I feel like there isn't as much out there. I feel like for products and fashion it's very difficult to find. So I think that's been the main challenge for us, trying to find that pockets of little grants or anything. So to get advice for income generation, I think it has been mainly ourselves, but we have in the past, when we first, even before we had a product, people did talk about crowdfunding and the Kickstarter. And at the time, because we're going through IP, thought it's not the right time for us, and we're not sure like whether it's the right route for us. But as more people said it, we have had, well, it's worked out that we actually did in the end do it. It was really, really good for us. We have a bookkeeper that is a friend of ours, so she's helped us, you know, like with advice. And also Rachel did the NatWest Entrepreneur Accelerator 2 years ago, and Heather Walls is from there, has helped us and just given us advice and just even, you know, the BIPC at the library, they offer like little courses and stuff, like talk about finance stuff. So it's just been, I think everyone has really helped us in a way and told us about different things. So it's been really good for that. The support in Manchester is just brilliant for stuff. And Flourish as well, just like the mentorathon and stuff, has just been really like helpful. So it's been brilliant, like dealing with Manchester for that. It's been great.
My name is Lindsay. I run Ready Lane Market Garden, which is a small-scale, organically certified vegetable garden in Cheshire.
Where do you go for your sort of any financial support or...?
That's interesting. So where do I get support and where have I learned how to run the economics of a business? I've definitely learned by doing, and it used to be enormous spreadsheets of trying to work out the tax return. And now I have an accountant and use QuickBooks, and that's answers a lot of questions actually about being legal and what I can and cannot do. Flourish actually have answered. I was mentored by Joe for a year and that was really useful. Other farmers, other businesses actually, but largely you're sort of working it out as you go, basically.
My name's Rachel Wong and I run One Small Step, which is a zero waste shop and which is part of Altrincham Market. My main source of income is through trading at the market, and at the moment I'm building an online shop as well, so that will be my next source of income as well. I have considered other sources of income, for example funding, but I didn't really know where to look or how to find it, or you know, why someone would pick me to fund. You know, it's actually quite serendipitous of me to sort of stumble across this event. I'm here because of other friends. So yeah, it's really interesting to find out what Flourish do and what they can do to potentially help me in my business.
So my name's Gemma Grattan. I'm from Droylsden in Manchester, and my business is The Bee Thrive, which is an ethical, sustainable clothing line. It's women's tailored suiting. So when I set The Bee Thrive up, just because I had this vision of how amazing it was and I believed in it, and I put so much money into the setup that when it came to the launch, which was great and amazing, I didn't put aside a marketing budget. So then thereafter it was like, right, now what's my route to market? And there's only so much you can do on social media before your funds dry up. Luckily, prayers from the universe, I got contacted and I've been consulting for another brand, a streetwear brand. So that's been my main source of income, setting up this other brand. But in doing so, it's resulted in me neglecting my own brand. So I'm just at this like in-between stage of really trying to find that balance of, you know, believing my own product as well as theirs. But I want to kind of really start channeling my energy back into the Bee Thrive. I've not really applied for any funding either or known where to access it from. The funding side of things, it's we need to survive whilst we're doing this, bringing this good service to the planet, and it's navigating how we start to kind of sustain our own lifestyles as well as creating a sustainable business.
My name's Rachel, I'm from Mosley Makes.
I'm Anne from Mosley Makes as well.
Well, Mosley Makes, it was a craft group that we set up with some friends and community people, and it was about grown-ups coming together to do craft activities who didn't get round to doing it and were sick of crafting with kids. But it grew into like doing arts trails. We've done 4 big community events, and we've done 3 mammoth trails everywhere. And then we've recently, in the last month, we've launched a new project called Phantasmagoria, which is a magical travel emporium. So we're a really new social enterprise. Like, as a community group, we've had a few grants, mostly from Awards for All, like one every year, just to do one big event. For this new venture, we've got nearly £50,000 in grant funding, some through the Arts Council, which is our first Arts Council grant, which Anne got because she is a proper artist. What I think is really exciting is that Tameside have funded us through Action Together, through their social prescribing programme, which is community wellbeing. So they've given us £25,000, which is a really decent investment in a project that hasn't even launched. And that's covered all our rent for the first year, which is a massive... It's a real issue, isn't it, covering your rent? So now we know we've got that, it's a breathing space, and it covers a bit of pay for us.
Yeah.
But basically, it's to start a volunteering programme that people can be socially prescribed into.
Thanks, ladies. That's it for this episode of Supporting Women in Social Enterprise podcast. A big thanks to everyone on our panel, Kelly Matteson from Heart Domestic Violence Prevention, Lindsay Wallen from Ready Lane Market Garden, Natasha Anand Bourgeois from Your Earth Clinic, and Yvonne Aduki from Dynamic Support and Soha Barbecue. And thanks to MetMunch for hosting this event for us. Whilst their Grow Cafe has had to close its doors for now, we don't doubt they'll be back with amazing food and friendship in the near future. Thankfully, all the other panellists you heard from are still running their social ventures during the pandemic. We'll also put links to those organisations in the show notes. Do you have any income generation tips to share? Connect with us on Twitter at FlourishCIC. If you're loving what you're hearing and you're listening on Apple Podcasts, please do leave us a review. Or if you're listening elsewhere, do share your thoughts and ideas on social media and tag us in. Like Eve Holt, a former interviewee from Show 2, who said she actually enjoyed listening back to her interview and has been sharing our podcast series through her networks. There's also our friends at Captivate Enterprise in the Northeast, who tweeted us to say, the work our social enterprises and podcasts are doing is really helping to keep them motivated, and that actually they're needed now more than ever. Finally, there's just enough time to let you know about the huge array of virtual events we've set up over the coming months, which you can access via Zoom. We're not going to let this lockdown stop us from providing training and support to those that need it. Some of these are for training and development, some are fundraisers, plus they're a great way to connect and socialise whilst we're all cooped up. Our free peer learning events calendar for the spring and summer is now live and ready to book onto. Topics include income generation strategies, if you need more support around this, business planning and using the social business canvas, and in June we're teaming up with Yellow Jigsaw for a session on media and PR. Plus we have a great new series of soup events we're taking virtual. These are fundraising events which help people learn about some of the social and community ventures running in their area whilst get cash into the hands of women changemakers, and they're a great way to socialise, albeit online. Check the dates and registration details for these on our Eventbrite page by looking up Flourish CIC Eventbrite Manchester. Or you can find out more on our website. Supporting Women in Social Enterprise is a Mike Media production.